Welcome, guys, to the first ever episode of the Amateur Theatre Podcast. It's a real pleasure to have got here finally and to be talking to you. Hopefully over the next couple of weeks and months, I will be throwing a few more of these out there, mixed in with a few blogs that can be found at amateurtheatrepodcast.co.uk. Well, my aim is to populate that website with as much information and as many resources as possible around being part of amateur theatre and producing amateur shows. Today we're talking to the lovely Victoria Coleman, who I've known for must be nearly 15 years now, and she's been acting for as long as I've known her. You'll notice probably there's a few tech issues. Vicky's headphones that she was using as her mic are rustling against her jumper for kind of the first 10 minutes, so if you can hopefully get past that, you'll either get used to it or it disappears. I tried my best in the edit to minimize it, but it was pretty tricky. Hopefully going forwards, as I do more and more of these, I will up my game on the tech side and you'll have a much more pleasant listening experience. Fingers crossed on that one. As for the interview itself, you'll hear in the podcast about her journey. Ultimately, she's ended up being a drama therapist, so clearly it's in her blood. And yeah, I really believe there's a load of stuff that you can take out of it. So have a listen and feedback if you'd like. And look out for the other ones that are coming down the line. Cheers.
Right, ask me a question.
What makes you a good actor?
What makes you a good actor? Like, genuinely, I don't know, but I could hypothesise, I could pontificate. You know, like, if my mum was here, she'd be losing her mind. She'd be like, oh, craft, darling, technique, you know, and quoting, you know, all the great theatre thinkers, Stanislavski, Brecht, and all of that. But, and I think, from my lowly, humble place, position, that there is merit in that. Absolutely. There is a lot to be learned from how to hold yourself, how to project, how to breathe, how to feel into your character, how to research your character, all of these things, how to listen on stage, how to be in the moment, be present as an actor. But I think there's a natural talent that a lot of people have.
Okay, so if you had to tell the people who are listening how you got to where you are, what would you say? What is it?
I've got good genes, right, for a start. So every single person on my mum's side of the family is an artist of some kind, and They were professionally and amateurly. So there's not a single... So I inherited a very artistic gene, and I do think there is something that you're just born with for many people. Obviously there's lots of people that just, you know, come from lawyers and all that, but I grew up in a very artistic household. Mm-hmm. My grandma was a professional musician, my grandpa was a professional actor, a touring actor, and went and did that to the day he died. And my mum is a professional actress. My uncle is an amateur actor, but absolutely could have been professional, but he hates wankers and couldn't abide, you know, the wankers in the industry. And my aunties are professional musicians. So I had a very creative upbringing, mm-hmm. where I was encouraged to express myself.
Okay.
And put on plays and shows right from the get-go. I was putting on shows and dancing and blah, blah, blah. So I suppose I had that kind of gave me a predisposition to this is fun, I can do this. There was a confidence, mm-hmm. you know, and this is what people do, right? You just let it rip and shine from your heart chakra, because that's what people did and told me to do. You know, my mum mm-hmm. did it, my uncle, everybody was doing it. So there's that. And also people talked about acting around me a lot. So my mum talked about stuff. So I read before I was 14, I'd read Stanislavski books all of them, actually. I read all that, and they're long, hard bits of...
In Russian.
No, lol. But, like, they're long, hard bits of shit, mate, and I read them all. And I loved drama at school, and, you know, so there was all the stage was that, you know, the cauldron was a favourable cauldron mm-hmm. for me to, if I had a predisposition to loving story and loving telling story, I was given good conditions to be confident to go, hey, I'm going to do this.
Okay.
And I did every drama thing at school, and I did theatre A-level studies. And then I was surrounded when that bud was ready to bloom after I'd finished my hippie days and all the rest of it by really talented people as well. I was very lucky to be at university in Oxford, which is a kind of melting pot for the just before they get really, you know, like there's a lot of good stuff happening in Oxford. I was very, very lucky. There's theatres that are easy to book for students. There are people with crippling talent at the age of 19 who are privileged and middle class who go, hey, I want to put on a show, so I'm gonna you know, there are, so I was very, very lucky. There's people all over the country with talent and wants to put on a show, but they can't because of their circumstances. Well, I ended up in a place where the talented people who wanted to do it could, and so I was very lucky to be surrounded by people like that for when that thing that I had I had kind of, you know, my melting pot of my childhood was ready to bloom. What was terrible for me was that drama schools kept saying, you can have a recall, but not giving me the final place. And then a stupid drama school gave me a place. So I believe... Oh,
you mean when you're applying to go to drama school?
Yeah. Oh, so okay. I was like, I want to be a professional actress, blah, blah, blah. And then I got into drama school, and it took about 3 minutes to realize that the last 5 years of my life had been just ridiculous. I should never have wanted to do that. Okay. And I quit very famously. Everyone was like, good luck at drama school. And a week later they were like, how's drama school? And I was like, I quit. And I consider it as when my reason returned, and I realized that I absolutely did not want to do that. I wanted to be a drama therapist. And that's when I went to do drama therapy. So I don't know. I feel like a bit of an idiot going on about myself. So a lot of it is circumstantial, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because if, for example, I'd grown up in Guernsey, would it have been the same? If I'd grown up with my dad on the island, I don't know, because the opportunities are just not there. It's I feel like it was circumstantial, but yes, I cannot deny that there is something born within me that loves stories. I love stories. I love hearing stories and telling stories. And I don't know. I can... I suppose I'm a really good impersonator as well. So maybe mm-hmm. I just do the mimicking thing. I can impersonate people. People fascinate me. And I think the same thing that led me to be a therapist is the same thing that led me to enjoy and potentially be okay at times at portraying other people, is that I can put myself in someone else's shoes very easily. I can think about what that must be like to be that person.
So do you need to have gone to some drama school to have learned certain things about acting in order to up the ante of what you can produce?
I have a feeling that drama school prepares you for the professional side of the business.
Okay.
And these days,
mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that back in ye olden days, drama school was more play this role, you know, feel into your body, learn the breathing, learn this, that, and the other, which I know for certain because I spent my 1 week at drama school learning how to breathe. And I still remember to breathe like it. So it was useful. I think that the emphasis now tips more into the preparing you for the business side
mm-hmm.
of, you know, earning money by being an actor.
Yeah.
And there is still a lot of space for the other stuff. But I think back in the olden days, it was all about the other stuff.
Right.
And I don't know, because I went to drama school for a week, but I do think that there would have been a lot of things I would have learnt about technique, projection. And I think, I truly believe that drama school can help an actor deepen their presence and ability to hold a character and be a more commanding actor. As an amateur, I think there has to be so many variables for you to be able to do it. And I think, I have no idea, but I believe that drama school teaches you how to get there, even if the variables aren't favourable. So, for example, I have found my most, when I feel like I've really like smashed it out of the park, is when I have felt really safe in the rehearsal room.
Okay, that's interesting.
And if I haven't, it's been shit. I've been paint by numbers acting because I haven't felt safe enough to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone else is taking up too much space, or the director is really nervous and needs me to get there, and I feel like I can't like do a shit version. You know, it's like when we were doing 448 and I did the Irish version and it clicked. Because I fully trusted that you wouldn't be sat there freaking out going, oh my God, is she going to do it Irish? It's really shit. I fully trusted that you knew that was my process, and I just had to do it Irish one time, and then it clicked. So I think professional actors learn at drama school, or just have perhaps an inbuilt thing where, even if the conditions are not favorable, even if they have a really dodgy co-lead or co-cast member, even if the director isn't great, even if there's all these kind of things, they can still get there. Because either they've been taught a certain discipline, or they just naturally have that thing inside them. And I think if you are an amateur, if you have the ability to do a good performance, I think it tends to only happen if the conditions are really favorable. That's my take. Or either you are or you're the kind of person that, you know, that you do the same thing, you kind of have your way, but it's great, it's a safe pair of hands, it's everybody knows what you're going to do when you step on stage, but that's brilliant, and you've got charisma and people are drawn to you, la la la, or you're, you know, third Roman from the left and it's whatever. That would be my view on it.
Where would you if you had to be pressed to place other people on that same timeline, where would you place the average amateur actor? Have they gone through the same thing, or what's your feeling? Okay.
I think.
I don't want to pigeonhole them all, but I'm just trying to understand, is there an aspiration to be a professional that then a realization of kind of the truth of the world comes, or the harsh reality of what it entails to become a professional?
Yeah, maybe you're right. I think a lot of amateur actors, thought I really want to do this, but a realization that on whatever level, maybe they didn't want to put themselves in that rat race, because it is an absolute shit show, mate.
Someone, I don't know who it was, I wrote down what they said, but not who said it. They basically said that it was like, people always perceive that it's skill that distinguishes professionals to amateurs. And his response was, it's not skill, it's the acceptance of risk. So if you want to be a professional, you have to say to yourself, I may earn no money, I may never have a career, I may miss out on opportunities elsewhere, but I'm going to risk it. And by risking it, you put yourself in scenarios where you learn things that people who didn't risk it wouldn't learn. And you come across things that only professionals know, but because they were in those scenarios.
Let me say this about the professional actor who is stopped working as an actor. I will put money on that person becoming part of an amateur theatre company when he's older.
Oh, really? Oh, you mean like...
when he's like 50.
Right.
Because it's definitely a bug that you catch if you're predisposed to catching that bug. I suppose amateur theatre gives you that license, doesn't it? Because it's like, we all know this is amateur. We're not supposed to be brilliant. And because people need bodies, so there's going to be a really keen director who's got five really good actors, and they're like, I really want to put this play on, and I need someone to stand there and say that line. So,
Johnny, you're up. The fact that there's always a place for whoever. That's key.
Right.
There's
for
very
real.
Few scenarios, and maybe that percolates down to people who have yet to find their kind of their thing in life, that actually in amateur theatre, there's always a place for you. You'll find a place. It doesn't even have to be on stage.
Yeah.
Backstage, do costume.
It's team sports without the sport. It's working towards something bigger than yourself as a team, being part of something bigger than yourself.
Without having to physically be in contact with people.
Yeah, and without the horrible sporting bit.
Okay, and what I'm kind of buying into the idea that to mold someone into what is perceived to be a professional actor, drama school is the perfect vehicle for that, because there's time, there's focus, and there's knowledge that can be imparted onto that person. Now, you will still get the variants of the very best who have a natural something. Then you have the slightly sort of less naturally able, but their versatility and their ability to either mimic or whatever it is strong enough to produce a performance of, you know, A grade quality. And then you have the repeaters. I just made that word up, but the ones who have found a way of doing it that works, and they can repeat, and they can repeat and repeat and repeat.
They have certain tricks, certain things when they're on stage that make people sit up and pay attention, and they just kind of regurgitate that in different roles.
Yeah. That would imply that it's not necessarily, you don't necessarily have to have a natural talent, as long as you have some sort of awareness and you're prepared to learn. And you put your mind to it, you'll set your mind to it.
If you want to do the best that you can do, whether you were born with some sort of, you know, cosmic light inside you that, you know, just, you know, give me the light, and that's all you need, and off you go. Or whether you're just like, you know, your average Joe that has to sweat a little bit and then you get there in the end.
Nice. So I have a question regarding the kind of the classic audition situation where you walk into a room and there's a director and an assistant director, and or maybe that's it, and you're asked to deliver a monologue.
When I wasn't in fear and I was just, okay, let's see what happens. You read the play, you select a character or characters that you are excited about, that you think you would like, and then you go away and you find a monologue that you think echoes that character.
Okay. Would you choose one from the play of a character that you wanted to play, or would you say that best to find something that is,
I don't know. I did Sweeney Todd, I did Our Country's Good. I did the monologue from Our Country's Good, because there's a character in that is very like Mrs. Lovett, but also could have been the other Joanna. It could have been Joanna. So I sort of like played it down the middle, because I didn't know. I had nothing to lose. I thought, I like this monologue from Our Country's Good, and hey, it could be Mrs. Lovett, it could be Joanna.
Okay, so to layer something just quickly on top of that, you can shoot it down or not. Are you looking, where is the emphasis lying? More on trying to find something that matches a character that you've picked that you like, or displays your talent for acting?
I think amateurly, if you're an amateur actor and a director that you don't know has said, I'm auditioning for Much Ado About Nothing, you've got a couple of choices here. You can either get a monologue from the play, obviously, or you can choose any Shakespeare monologue that mm-hmm. you think that you're really comfortable with, that you feel comfortable and you can perform it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with if an amateur director is saying, I'm doing pick a straight play, I don't know.
The Crucible. So,
that old chestnut. That I'm doing The Crucible. I'm sure there's like an etiquette, isn't there, of like you're supposed to turn up with a monologue from that play.
I think within the amateur world,
it's different.
What the fuck you want, baby. Yeah. As long right? as it is smash it out of the park good.
Yeah. If you feel comfortable and so that would be what I say. Okay. If it's Shakespeare, it's got to be Shakespeare. If it's not, that world's your oyster. You can turn up to a non-Shakespeare play audition with a Shakespeare.
Okay. So what we're saying is learn a good Shakespeare monologue at the very least, because then you can always use that wherever you go. There's something that I would like to ask you as an actor, actress. Like, what is the situation with going to an audition, standing, saying, I mean, I've had people sit in their chair and just deliver a monologue. I can read you a monologue. What's the mentality there? What's your, like, surely you've got to at least move a little bit, or.
Yeah, it's tough that, because that person could be really good. It's just fears got them that day, or they're not sure, or that's really tough.
Someone who sits there or stands there and reads me back the thing I've given them or the thing they've prepared, I get nothing from that. But the person who sits down and picks their toes or takes their shoes off and puts them in the corner and then comes back while reading, or who, you know, anything that represents like some thought process of trying to find something, some process of discovery.
I think, do you know what I say to that? I say bollocks to all that. Here's what I say to everybody, anybody auditioning where they're given something that they have to read back or they're preparing to read back for an audition. Because if they are the person that is just sitting down and just reading it back, so someone who's either very nervous, it's their first audition, they're not very schooled in, you know, kind of the process of embodying a character, not schooled is the word, or they're not very comfortable, or that they're self-conscious or whatever it is, my advice to anybody who finds themselves in that position where they think, I'm just not good at auditions, but once I get the part and I'm in rehearsals and I know where I'm standing, I can really do it, is that's fine. Don't worry about where you're standing or where, sit down if that's what makes you feel comfortable. That's fine. Here's what you need to do. You need to read that thing that the director's given you or your monologue. Don't worry about being a character. Don't worry about anything. And find the words on that page that live inside you. I'm probably not going to say this very well because it's late and I have no brain. But what I'm saying to that person is don't worry about anything. If you need to sit down, if you're if it's not feeling right, and you know that if you got given a part and the director helped you, you'd be really good, but it's just the audition, right? Fine. Don't worry. Knock that out the window. Sit there. Cross your arms if you need to. Look at the floor if you need to. But the only thing that you need to do is read that monologue and find the way that you saying those words would be true.
Okay.
So you can sit with your arms folded, looking at the floor. Don't even look at the director, as long as when you say it, it feels like the truth from yourself, not even from the character. Don't worry about the character. Don't worry about what you look like or anything. Just say it as if to you it is the absolute truth. And that's it. That's all you need to do.
Nice. Auditions. Tick.
Because that is the trick. Because after that, the director will see that you can, through the tool, the instrument of your body, deliver the human truth with words that you didn't write. So you can look at the universal truth of these words that some other human wrote, and you can say them as if they are your truth. And even if your body language is all fucked and the director is like, hey, look, when it's the show, I want you to be this big bawdy bastard. And you said it all with you, but that's fine, because I can see in you that you can speak the truth as if these lines that someone else wrote, you can say it as if it is your truth. Then fine, we're off.
I like it. It's good. Okay. So I'm very consciously going to skip over the weird awkwardnesses of being in a rehearsal room for the first time with a group of new people all being asked to perform something. I'm going to sort of, we can at some point maybe touch back on that, but in terms of an individual's approach to a rehearsal room, how are you entering that space? Are you how prepared are you? What have you done? You know you've been cast. You've got the script beforehand. You know the character that you're playing. What's the kind of the first steps that you're taking before you walk in the room? Are you off book before we get there? Are you?
Hell no, bitches.
I know you're not, but like what is the...
Never, ever, ever in my life have I turned up to rehearsals off book, and it ain't a good thing. But I need to hear myself say it out loud. I need to hear the other person who is going to say what they're going to say back to me. I need to know where I'm going to stand. Otherwise, I learn it in this very robotic manner.
Okay.
But I do think there is some merit in turning up off book. I really do.
No. Okay, this is amateur theatre. No one ever, ever, ever turns up off book.
So, bitches, we've got no time. You've got to watch the movie and you've got to think, cool, I know what this play is about. And I know what my character does and I know what they say. So that's cool. So I don't need to worry about, like, what's going on here. Like, these are like some amateur shortcuts. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about if you do a mimicking thing of them, just like, you need to know everything about that play inside out. What's a quick way of doing that? Read the synopsis, watch the film. So I've done that, and the only preparation that I ever do before a rehearsal, the first day of rehearsal, is I do exactly what I just said, is I think about my character and I think about what about that character is true for me.
Okay.
That's all. I just go, right, okay, that's why 448 was like one of the things I did the most research with, because I had to like dig to be what was true for me, and I had to feel safe. So we had to talk about it all the time because...
Yeah, no, I remember you saying like this.
I have to feel 100% safe to show what is true for me about this character, because it's being psychotic. So yeah. Like that's pretty huge. But in other shows, you just go, right, what's true for me about this character? What is true for me? It's easy at the moment with Mariah because she's a bawdy Dorset wench, and that is true for me on so many levels. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to dig too deep to find a bawdy Dorset wench. I was like, oh, there she is. That's it. That's all I would do. Just think, who is my character? They're this person. Who are my important relationships? Have a look at the scenes and think, so what is true for me about this character? What part of this character lives within me? Where in my sub-personality list of sub-personalities within me does this one ring? And who are my relationships? Why am I saying what I'm saying in this scene to this person? If you are lucky enough to know what scene you will be rehearsing that day, because sometimes in amateur theatre you don't know what scene you're going to be rehearsing. But if you do, just think, right, why am I saying what I'm saying? And that's it.
Okay. And how much of a emphasis on the relationship with the director or the other cast members at this stage, like the early, are you just trying to feel out your character, or are you trying to feel out the director and the other cast for where you can take it? like, what's the mindset that you go into it with?
It depends from
a director's perspective, I would like people to spend the first half of the rehearsal process, I mean, like the first few weeks of rehearsals, just really like going, what's this guy doing? Okay, at the moment all he wants to do is pull his sword out and stab everyone in the room. I'm like, where does that come from? I don't know, but I just feel like that's the level of anger that he's kind of got at the moment. I'm like, great, let's see it, let's do it, whatever. But I always find what I get is 10 actors who are like stood still, script in hand, looking at each other going, whatever, reading their lines as if it was just like, you know, a cold read for radio. There's no dynamism. There's no, I'm going to feel out where I should be moving around.
Well, mate, you've got to tell them what to do.
Ah, well, there you go. That's what you're saying, is it?
I think that, yeah, in amateur theatre, I think the director has to have a really clear blocking vision, definitely. Like, okay, you two are going to be stood over there, you're having a conversation, can you move down on that line? Even if it doesn't feel natural, find the way to make it natural. Even if it doesn't, we can change it, but I'd like you to move. Definitely, yeah. Get them moving. And let them feel safe that they... you've got an idea that you think that they should move over here, and because then they'll start to experiment. It's like you're giving them the train, you're giving them a piece of paper. This is the piece of paper and these are the edges, and then within it start coloring, and I'll tell you what you need to rub out.
Okay. I perceive this lake in front of me, and there's a lot of boats that are anchored. They've all dropped their anchors. They turn up to rehearsals, and the first thing they do is they put their boat on the water and they throw their anchor over the side.
They just need to know what story they are telling in that moment. That's all it is. So if they're afraid to move, it's because they're not confident of what story they're telling in that moment. So, and each person just needs to know what story they're telling that you think. So you're telling a story that this, let's try it with that energy. And if you were, would you move over to here? Let's go, you know. So that's just a confidence thing, that they know what story they're telling, because then they might start to move a bit more.
Okay, so are you like, in terms of an actor's perspective, I can see what you're saying in terms of like, in terms of all the things you said before about feeling safe and, you know, being able to express oneself freely, and also like having the confidence to fail and stuff like that comes from understanding that there's a framework that you can play within.
Yeah.
As you say, that piece of paper that you're allowed to colour on, and you're not concerned because you know that, you know,
the director has told you what it will look really good if you all are telling the story that, you know, mm-hmm. and so you're allowing them to drop into their own truth of the story that you see for it. They're not flailing around.
Okay. It's not about, you're not trying to restrict them. You're setting parameters, but do you want within those boundaries?
That's really important for a cast where they are struggling to find their confidence. Because once they can relax into, because sometimes you'll get a cast where someone starts going and that gives up, and then the truth emerges. But if you've got a cast in amateur theatre where they're stood there and everyone's a bit rusty, don't know, that's where they need that safety of like, okay, guys, right, I can see we're all struggling to find our way into the character. So let's think about the story that you're telling. And maybe you only need to do that in a few scenes, and suddenly something will click and they'll lean into their character in the play, I think.
No, I like it. I agree with it. Okay, so let's say we have all this has transpired in the manner that we joyously wanted it to. And this is not meant to be a pointed question, but I think you of all people, it will resonate with more than others. What do you do when you hit that roadblock? What is your kind
of... right, so what do you do when you hit the roadblock? Well, if you're like, really...
Sorry to interrupt again, but just I'm trying to make sure that we don't digress too much, but like you are, we've set it up, rehearsals are going well, we've got this roadmap, and we're all kind of getting there together, and we're, you know, the interaction between actors is going well, and the director is kind of steering the ship in a manner that suits us as an actor. What happens when you come across that thing that says, I've got this far, looking back I can see what I've done, but I just can't fathom a way of going forward?
Like when I did The White Witch.
Yeah.
Just couldn't get it, man. Just couldn't get it. If I did it now, it would be totally different, but I just couldn't get it. So as an actor, you have to decide, you have to figure out a couple of things. First of all, you've got to be aware that it's happened, because you might not, and if you don't, whatever. If you're aware that you're not feeling it and it's not happening and something's wrong, you have a couple of questions to ask yourself. Do you have the time and headspace to try and get it to a place, if you are capable of really like owning it and shining the light and all the rest of it? Do you have the time and energy and patience and all the rest of it to try and figure it out? Because if you don't, that's another scenario. If you do, then do you trust your fellow actors and your director to kind of help you through it, to start playing and doing something really silly and different? And if the answer to those first two questions is yes, that you do have the time and you do trust your director and people are going to be chill with you going, I'm really not getting this, so can I? My advice is always do it as yourself first. So just turn up and say the lines as if it's you, as if it's you. Then do it in a funny accent, and then go away and think about what story the director wants you to tell in each scene. And if after that you can't get it, don't worry, it's amateur theatre, man. Just to turn up and enjoy being with all the people and have a party. Put it down to experience. Do you know what I mean? Because there's only so much you can do in life. And, you know, Simon Callow, in his wonderful book, Love Is Where It Falls, talks about this at length, you know, just going, I can't get this. I know I'm shit. I'm turning up on stage and I don't know, there's a gap. I can't do it. And I just think it's par for the course.
Mm-hmm.
And you either have got the energy and the time and the trust and the support to kind of break it down and get there, or you don't. And if you don't worry about it. Get to a place that you're comfortable, that you feel like you can turn up and you don't let your other actors down, and you can deliver the lines, and you can tell the story, because that's the most important thing. If you're not shining like the brilliant actress or actor, brilliant actor decided this, it's actor, for God's sake.
It works.
If you're not
if
you're not shining like the brilliant actor you know you're capable of, it's amateur theatre, baby. That's what it's about. You're not being paid. Enjoy it. Turn up, but make sure you don't let all the other people down, and make sure you're telling the story. That's all. Don't go implode and cry in the toilets and think, oh no. It's amateur theatre. If you're not getting it this time, hey, don't worry. Enjoy being with the other actors. Chill, man. And just speak to the director and say, look, I don't think I'm going to get there. Okay, maybe a miracle will happen, but I don't think I'm going to. So what's the most important thing in each scene, the story you need me to tell? And I will do my best to do that. And I will learn my lines, and I will turn up, and I will support the other actors to do their best. But look, I'm not going to get there, and I'm not going to worry about it, because this is amateur theatre and I'm here to enjoy myself.
Good. I like it.
That's what I would say.
So I guess let's wrap up rehearsals very quickly with a question about conflict, basically.
Mate, how long have we got for this?
Not long enough. But
conflict. Amateur theatre, conflict.
Say what? I don't know if we want to be specific about where that conflict lies, but let's say within the group, what's your kind of...
What, when there's like group dynamics. I mean, there's so many different ways that conflict can occur. Look, normally it's through director and actor, isn't it? The actor is like, you know, and in amateur theatre, it's often something so silly like, I don't want to wear that dress. And they've not thought about my character. And I think my character should wear this dress. You know, it's often madness like that. So there's that, which is really difficult. And then there's like group dynamics. Luckily, I haven't had a lot of it, apart from the very famous, and how is he not in jail? But he's not, moments, but he's not in jail.
He's definitely killed someone though. So when they find out he's not in jail, when they find the body,
which they will. Conflict in amateur theatre is a really difficult one because we're all there because it is so difficult, isn't it? Because it's like, for some people, it's really important. For some people, they've invested their own money. For some people, they've given up time. They might have taken a week off work to do that show. They might have spent their own money on costumes and hiring a space or rehearsal space, and
they just take it very seriously in general.
Or they say, yes, it's amateur, but let's do the best job we can, and I want to try and do the best job that I can. And then you've got the other people, and this is where I'm a tricky customer because I sit right in the middle of it. But I think that's healthy. Just be a little bit of both. Take it as seriously as you can, but also have fun and remember it's just amateur, baby. But then there's the people that really are like over in their, hey, I ain't getting paid. If I don't know my lines on opening night, what are you going to do? You know?
And then I tell you what, from a director's point of view, poof, that is the hard one.
Well, they often don't get cast again, do they? Because, you know, even amateur people want to know that they've at least put on something that isn't eye-wateringly cringy and all the rest of it. Anyway, it's difficult because, yeah, you've got those people that are like, I'm doing this because I enjoy it and it's fun. And there's people that are going, yes, but I need to know that you know your lines and that you're going to be there and you're not 20 minutes late for rehearsal. And that's the tension when you're doing something like this. And that's why amateur theatre can be quite interesting from a sort of human perspective, kind of having all of that play out. But, you know, Mike, I'm not the person to ask here because I'm not the director. It's not my job to solve all of that. It's a director's job. And this is why being an amateur director, this director, is a thankless task. It's all risk, isn't it, for you? All your money and time and effort and vision and all the rest of it. And then you get these assholes that turn up and go, I'm not coming to rehearsal. I think conflict in amateur theatre is just par for the course. And if you want to enjoy it, you've got to have a healthy balance of respecting that there is someone enabling you to have this much fun. Someone who's put their money on the line, not, you know, they've been brave enough to say, okay, we're going to do this play. They've done all the hard work of, in their spare time for free, casting, getting things together. You know, and if you're doing an amateur play, you have to turn up with that fundamental respect that someone somewhere has sacrificed a lot because they love it, and they have hired the theatre probably with their own money. They have found costumes. They have found a van to get things in. They have trawled around the dregs of the amateur scene and found you co-casts. You know, all this fun that you're about to have is because someone else has. So, you know, you've got to have that respect and take it that seriously, but don't take it so seriously that you become the arsehole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's what you've got to do.
Okay, cool. Quickly, shows. The show.
Are we going to wrap up?
We're going to wrap up on the show because we've got bed to go to.
Yeah.
So I'm very conscious of how this is the one element that I'm not mentally in tune with. And I know you've said in the past to me that from a director's point of view, the best directors have acted because there's an empathy that you can kind of place on your own shoulders when you look out and watch your cast do what they're doing. And I've not, I mean, I have, that's not true. I have acted before, but I've not taken on that burden for a long time. And in the same manner as the kind of the people that I'm asking to do it for me are. What is your kind of overview of approaching the shows and prep and being on stage and kind of, I guess it's, I'm going to offer a follow-up question to your response preemptively. Like, how are you making it fun for yourself every night if you're doing 6, 12, whatever it is, shows? And also, how are you ensuring that the what you've learned in rehearsals translates onto stage?
Well, look, if it's not fun, don't do it. If turning up and doing that show is not your idea of absolute, this is so much fun, don't do it, because you've got better things to do.
For the audience listening, just don't.
No one's going to listen to this.
Don't audition and don't do the rehearsals. If you've gone that far, do turn up for the shows. Even if it's not fun.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, to clarify, if you are really hating it, you still owe respect to the other people. And that is why, and I've got a bit of a reputation, but I've dropped out of a few shows early doors for that very reason, because I've sensed I'm going to hate this and it's not worth it. I'm out. And you've got to make that decision very early. You've either got to decide this is going to be tricky and there's a few characters here, but I'm going to stick in it for whatever reason, and then you have to stick in it. You can't, and you've got to soak that up, or you've got to get to rehearsal, look around and go, oh no, and leave. And I've done that a couple of times, and hence I've got myself a reputation. But it's because I've known I'm going to hate every minute of this, and I could be at work earning money, or I could be reading a book. And I truly believe if you're an amateur actress, you're an amateur actor, you've got to be doing it because you just love it. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not particularly halfway through the rehearsal process fond of the director, or you're a member of the cast, or you're not really enjoying your character, if you've got that far, you've got to chalk it up and say, well, to do another show, I've got to put in good face here and support all these people that are enjoying it or have put their money in. So, but yeah, and if you don't, you've got to pull out early doors. But yeah, If I would never give advice on how to enjoy, because you, in my opinion, if you don't, on the whole, there's going to be elements you hate. There's going to be things that you don't like. That's the truth with everything. You know, I like going on holiday, but I hate booking the tickets and getting on the plane. You know, there's things that you're not going to like, but if you don't overall enjoy it, don't bother. What was your other question? How do you put what you've done in rehearsal into practice? Don't think about it, just trust that your body knows what to do.
Okay. Muscle
definitely movement. I think you've got to, yeah, you, I my personal opinion is it's got, by the end of your rehearsal process, it's got to be in the body, your lines, where you're moving. It's got to be like, you don't even think about it, you just go on stage and you know where you're standing. Mm-hmm. If you don't then sit there every day on the bus or in the, when you're getting changed, and walk that through play in your mind from beginning to end, so that you've rehearsed it in your head.
Okay. No, I like that. In terms of the obvious that come up when you talk about going on stage, how are you approaching fear? How are you approaching some other external things like the audience and stress and things we've touched upon throughout the whole process, but they become ever more prevalent when there's a 200 people sat?
Are you saying this because you've worked with amateur actors that seem to do really well in the rehearsal room, but then when it shows, the audience just makes them freak out and they...
Well, certainly, they, I mean, that's not, yeah. Not... I'm not saying it explicitly because of that, but that has certainly happened. Like, I've seen the reverse, where you suddenly get a spark from someone who plays off the audience. Suddenly the audience is there and it's like, oh, you know, or you're a week in and you're like, where the fuck was this in rehearsals? Mm-hmm. What have you suddenly been drinking before the shows. But no, it just seems like there's a natural thing that occurs that when it becomes real, and I'm not saying rehearsals aren't real, but when it becomes real and people have paid to see you, there's a whole load of other stuff going on in your head that you need to overcome. Hey, do you not get scared?
Not anymore.
Okay.
No.
That's because you're not fearful of it being a poor performance, or you're not what
the first thing is learn your lines, because that's all that matters. Just make sure you know your lines, because then half of the fear will be gone. Okay. Because no matter what, you can turn up, and so you've just got to know your lines. That's mm-hmm. the main thing. Because even if you feel terrified or it's shit or whatever, you can just, and you think this is all going to go to shit, at least you know you can support everyone else by at least just coming on stage and saying your lines, because that is the base thing that will help everyone else. That's how you be a team player. So just learn your lines, because that will get rid of most of it. Because the number one thing in amateur theatre, I'm saying that because I have no idea about actual professional theatre, is, and I'm sure maybe professional actors will be like, oh yeah, people turn up and don't know their lines, but like, is like backstage going, oh god, you know, the fear of like, I'm not going to say it. Oh my god. So that's the first thing, just don't know. But I don't get scared, because this is going to sound terrible, but I guess I just have it in perspective of like, I'm just going to do my best.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care what people think of me.
Yeah, but you do not want to do a shit performance. You do not want to read a review that says Victoria Coleman playing Mariah, blah. You don't want that.
No, of course I don't. I guess I have two people that live inside me. I have someone who doesn't want to do a shit performance, and then I have a very nurturing mother who goes, but if you do, the world won't crash, so just do your best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even if there is a shit review, so what? Like,
I've got enough, like, you know, I've got enough internal mummy goods to be even if this is shit, you know what? You've done some good in the past. It's a blip. Yeah. Just support your other actors and have fun, and that's enough. You know, your next paycheck doesn't come out of this. It's just you try, you know, if you hit mark and you do a really good job, what a bonus. But if it is just mediocre and everyone says that was a bit shit, oh dear.
Yeah, and I think that's a really massive thing though. Like, there, it's tricky to make a good amateur show for so many reasons.
Mm.
Whether there's enough money being invested, whether you've found the right cast, whether the director is strong enough, whether the scenery is strong enough, whether the stage is strong, there's so many elements to it that need to fall into place to make it a good show. That there's so many ways it could be a bad show. And I think I get the impression that a lot of amateur actors, their personal, like, their net worth is reduced because they feel like being part of that performance has affected them in a certain way. Like, sadly, it's amateur theatre. No one's given you 50 grand to put the show on.
Mm.
You know, it's a difficult thing to...
That's the walking that line, isn't it? Of being respectful enough to everyone that you do your best without investing your sense of worth into what other people think of your performance.
Yeah.
It's holding that tension between going, I enjoy this, it's fun. I want to play this part really well, because that will give me joy to know that I am, you know, and there's just a joy that comes when you feel like you're really embodying a character. So that would be great if I hit that mark for everyone.
Yeah.
But if I don't, doesn't matter. And I'm going to just enjoy being with people, enjoy that I get to do this, and be respectful enough of everyone else to do my best. And if people give me a bad review, just be wise enough that that does not define who I am as a person. Yeah. You know, that's so difficult because you know, the Chipping Norton Gazette, you know, Barry, who's never had a day's theatre training in his life, but he's the theatre reviewer, has said, you know, Gillian playing maid number three gave a lackluster performance. And poor Gillian, you know, who's got four kids and five grandchildren, who's a wonderful soul, is now crying, saying, I can't believe they said this. So it's that sweet spot of being extremely fragile and to meet those fragile needs, putting themselves into a public arena where their deepest wish is to be validated and that fragility met. But to have that fragility met, they have to hone a sort of fake confidence and bravado as an armor to wear. And I'm going to sound like an absolute big head. And you know why I know that is because I know it. I've been there. And I have that in me and I have to hold that. But luckily for me, I've had the awesome privilege of many years of therapy. And I have. And I now have an internal mother who can hold both those things so that they don't take over and I don't cry in the toilets. Or invest too much, and I don't know, and so I had to have the therapy to get there, and some amateur actors don't. Some amateur actors hold that sweet spot. They go, hey, I'm going to do my best, and if Barry thinks I'm shit, I can say that hurts, but I can still get up and do my best the next night.
Yeah, it's weird how, and this will be my I'll say this as my final thought, because I think what you just said is a good point to wrap up on, but like what's really weird, having said all of this stuff, but that what for me makes someone a really good actor is that what if they can put their hand out with that fragility there and allow it to be poked and prodded and stuff, it's super sensitive, super whatever, and then just at the right moment take it back in and guard it, that ability to just for the performance or for the rehearsal or for the audition to just allow the fragility to shine. And it's like, as you know, all the things you said about armor and all stuff, if you can just open up your chest and remove that armor, and sadly what happens is people poke at it and it hurts because it's very delicate, and then but as long as you can close up that armor again, and you know you haven't damaged yourself too much, you can do it again the next night. It's like that fragility is the thing. It's weird how, you know, you speak for 3 hours, maybe you get some interesting things come out, but that fragility sums up all of that stuff. What you just said is exactly right. If you can find that balance and you can use that fragility, if you can open yourself up to it covers everything. It allows you to be a crazy person and do crazy things, but then come back to yourself and be normal again. It allows you to open up to other people doing stuff without you judging them, because everyone's fragile in this moment. It allows you to go out on stage and be, you know.
Well, it's more than fragility. The other word would be vulnerable, wouldn't it? Because to offer a part of your soul up to be seen. And judged, which is what you do as an actress. And that's what I mean about finding the truth of it in yourself. And why do I keep saying actress? I've got a connection with it. Let me have it. So if you are being, it's like, well, I'm going to go back to 448 psychosis. You know, I had to be the most vulnerable. I had to, because if you're really going to be believable, you have to do it, find it from within yourself, and to find the part of yourself that is having a nervous breakdown and say, hey, everybody come and see this. That's offering up your vulnerability. And yeah, I guess either drama school professionals teach you, or you are just born with a natural ability to become that vulnerable without it ruin your soul. And you don't have to be on the internet for more than 5 seconds without seeing many famous actors who it did ruin their soul. And I would argue how many actors, it hasn't. I mean, let's just put Emma Thompson on a pedestal, because I just think she potentially was born with that magic ability to become vulnerable and show parts of her soul through her performances whilst keeping that internal mother that held her and said, even if they see this part of you and they don't like it, you are good. Do you know what I mean? And if you're an amateur actor and you don't have that, don't worry, baby. It's Amdram. Get there for the after show party. That's always the best bit of Amdram, the after show party. That's where everyone gets off with everyone and the fights happen. It's brilliant. Who has been to an Amdram after show and not come away with either a scandalous piece of gossip or a bruise? I mean, it's this, the bit, best.
This bit's being cut, by the way. We're ending on the Emma Thompson bit.